So you'll do it in the rehearsal. It's dark now. The blackout happened while I was waiting for my accompanist to arrive for rehearsal. Another elderly limb must have thrown itself against a power line when it dislocated from its trunk. 20 minutes later, my door swings open with a sigh, and an expected voice calls out from my entryway. "Hello, I'm here." I follow the gravelly sound. It's Joseph, my guitarist. He's thrust his hulking body into my alcove and is so close that I can smell his livid sweat and his parched breath. I take a step back, but he takes a step closer. Joseph is a man accustomed to filling up space, as if others should contort themselves to accommodate him, an arrogance innate to large men who look down upon the rest of us. "The whole block is out," he says. "Trees uprooted. Your neighbors are going to be pissed about their dented Teslas." Some people like being pissed. It gives them a sense of purpose. He rests his guitar case against my wall. I cannot tell if he's smiling. All I can see is the rough outline of his body in my narrow hallway and the edges of his hair grown askew from the savage wind. He hands me a bottle. I grip the glass tightly. It feels like wine. Joseph has brought expensive French wine to all three of our past rehearsals with the expectation that we will finish the bottle. And we do, but only because he drinks more than me. "It's a good thing we only really need our ears tonight," he says. "I like a blackout. Helps sharpen the senses." He moves past me with his heavy feet and sits in the chair across from my coffee table, lined with the half-dead candles I lit after the blackness fell. We don't really know each other, but his movements in my house suggest familiarity. With the neck of the wine still in hand, I sit across from him on my love seat. At our last rehearsal, we assumed these same positions. I had sat explaining the harmonies I wished for him to play during the finale. While I spoke, he had twisted his index finger in his ear and flicked whatever he found onto the floor and glanced out the window to the empty street outside. And at that time, I found this repulsive gesture somewhat endearing, perhaps because it signaled his comfort with me. It is true, too, that he had almost seemed handsome in the dim afternoon light, with his long limbs and earthy eyes and expansive shoulders. And I imagine what it might feel like for his hands to brush my back, if he would have been able to elicit a shiver from skin that hadn't been touched by another person in so long. Tonight, though, there is something that bothers me about Joseph, but it must be that I cannot really see him, and it's disorienting to be in a room with someone I understand only vaguely, such that I find myself searching for my bearings. Though he, this guest of mine, seems completely at ease. I pour us two glasses of jammy wine and hand him one. He grabs the glass and swallows greedily. "I needed this," he says. "I had the shittiest day at work." A good day at work is rare. That's why they call it work. I want to have some wine too to calm these peculiar nerves of mine, but I resist taking a sip. Practicing is work too, I suppose, but I like it enough when it takes my mind off things. "Have you worked on the other pieces we practiced last week?" I ask, aware that I'm unable to keep a trace of impatience from my voice. "I know them well enough. The magic happens with spontaneity, happy accidents." He leans back, his head cradled in one of his hands, and then I think he smiles because even though he doesn't know much about me, he knows I disagree. I believe in rehearsals and arrangements, in order and detail and rules. I have taken care with these pieces of music and arranged them lovingly, like a mother who bathes her child and cleans the dirt from under each tiny fingernail. Classical music is different, I say. There isn't much room for accidents. I am stating something that will have no effect. Joseph hates classical music for precisely that reason, that there is no room for error. "Not my thing," he says. "I've been really into Cuban salsa lately. Did I tell you I went to Cuba recently?" "You never mentioned it, no." I sit forward and finally take a sip of wine. Joseph is going to tell me about it, even though I don't really care. "It was just last month. I wasn't expecting much. I've been told the food sucked and there wasn't much to look at off resort. It's true that everything seems stuck in time, the cars, the houses. You know, very poor. extremely poor. But man, I went to the dance clubs and there it was, life, real life. The music was just so fucking good. I feel him staring at me, though there isn't much I imagine he can see. Cuba, I imagine air thick with tobacco leaf and sugar cane and a heavy sizzling heat, a salt-laden sea against a sorbet-colored sky. I think he smiles again, but in the dull candlelight, it seems like a facsimile of what he intended. There's nothing like live music, I say. There's nothing like dancing to that live music. It pulses. People are so free with their bodies there, too. That was the other thing. Lots of sex workers going about their business and no judgment from anyone. Sex workers? Yeah. He takes a long drink of wine. It's as if he's told me an interesting, innocuous fact about Cuba, a curiosity that I might find charming. I offer him more wine and our fingers accidentally touch. I'm unprepared for the erotic, odious shock of his skin, and I ask a question I never should have asked. Did you do it? Do what? Buy sex. He shakes his head but doesn't answer. He unlatches his guitar case with a neat snap and picks up his instrument and begins to tune. It sounds like it hasn't been played in days. Like I said, it's different there. Buying sex seems to be just like buying a beer, he says. I stand up abruptly and then I sing a scale. My soprano carries a suite of notes in the stiff air. I am lost in the sheer physicality of producing music with my mouth, and for a moment I've forgotten about what it was I wanted to learn and then forget. Good enough for warm-up, he says. Good enough for now. Just a moment. My guitar is being a bit finicky. He plucks at his strings and everything sounds sharp. Outside, the rain has stopped, but the street is still blanketed in a fist of darkness. The power will be restored soon. Joseph turns his pegs, but each time he plays a chord, it still sounds dissonant. As he plays those ugly notes, I try not to focus on what he's just said. Sex work. Work. Sex. I remember a story I listened to once on the radio about women who sold themselves. One woman lived in the raw Nevadan desert in a rooming house. Her body had been used by many men over the years, but as she spoke in her shaky, nicotine-stained drawl, she insisted she didn't mind her line of work. She came into it naturally after she left the porn industry. All the men she saw were kind to her. All of them smelled nice. The interviewer asked if her family knew where she was, and the woman had responded that she didn't have any family except for her son, who had just turned 7 years old. Later, it was revealed that the woman kept her son's framed picture under lock and key in her dresser drawer. I thought about why she might do that, if it was more than just the comforting efficiency of compartmentalization. I felt the truth was that she did not want to poison the person she loved most. The woman could lie to herself about her own body and its exploitation, but she couldn't extend that dishonesty to her child. Her child was the true test of how she really felt about it all. Now Joseph's guitar is sounding more and more in tune, the notes less discordant, closer to a pleasurable sweetness. I say, it's strange to me the notion of buying someone's body to use a woman knowing she wouldn't have otherwise been willing had there been no money involved. Joseph is looking at me, but I can't tell what it is he's thinking. His mouth is closed, his eyes vacant, his instrument is tuned finally, and he begins to strum a benign chord progression on his guitar. They say prostitution is the oldest profession, he says. The oldest profession is midwifery. He closes his eyes and begins to play more forcefully so that I can hear the snarl of his fingers against the strings. It is a melody I don't recognize, but it sounds like timba. He started off slow and now has broken into a rhythmic, thrusting salsa. Two ghostly bodies appear in my mind, negotiating in a pattern of feet and arms. I understand what he likes about the music and its evocation of sex. I imagine him at the bar filled with the musk of bodies and alcoholic fumes, a woman brushing up against him while he purchased his gin and tonic. He would have offered her a drink and she would have accepted. He would have taken her hand and led her to his room. After it was done, though, he would have been regretful because he would have forgotten about the demanding aftermath, the small talk punctuating the thick silence, the fastening of a belt and rustle of a shirt, the embarrassing flush of a toilet, the need to say something to dissolve the strain. Joseph flattens his palms suddenly against the sound hole of the guitar, killing any reverberation. He says, I thought about going through with it. I was close to saying yes. You probably won't believe this, but I felt like it was even expected of me. But that kind of sex always has consequences, even when you're paying for it to be easy. So no, I didn't go through with it. Joseph looks at me as if expecting me to agree with him, but I can't stand the look of him right now. His lanky, limmy body, his fuzzy head and smarmy smile, the way he splays himself. I begin to sing another scale to warm up. I want the rehearsal done and over. As I sing, Joseph accompanies me with simple chords, and when I finish that scale and begin another, he plays with me for the first few notes, and then he loses interest and puts his guitar at rest before pulling out his phone. The flat blue light sharpens his thin lips and slightly crooked nose so that he resembles a caricature of himself. Then the lights in my house blinker and they're on, full force. Everything in my house suddenly vibrant and alive. And Joseph, too, is clear to me now, the stamp of crow's feet, his liney forehead, and his dry, hard fingernails, his stubble dirty against his unshaven face. He stares at me for a moment, and then he swings his hand forward as if he's lunging for me, but instead he picks up his instrument. I'm ready for real now, he says. Let's play.
And that was The Rehearsal, read by Alexis MacIsaac, who submitted that short story to the RTE Short Story Competition. And Alexis was shortlisted from about 1,500 entries down to the final 10. And the final adjudication and award happened on the 29th of November in Dunleary, and Alexis travelled to Dublin for that. And RTE, who host this competition, encourage any writer with Irish passport or an Irish connection to go to fmacmanusstories@rte.ie. That's fmacmanusstories.ie. stories@rte.ie. And they encourage you, should you have a yen to write, to start thinking about the 2025 Francis MacManus Short Story Competition. But to get back to Alexis, is a dual Irish citizen, Canadian citizen, whose writing has been featured in Mass Literary Magazine 2023 Story Award winner, The Bookends Review, and Agnes and True, among others. And she previously toured as a musician with the Irish Show River Dance and the High Kings. And now she works in Ottawa as a civil service with the Domestic Oceans Policy. And she lives with her husband, Callum, and has two sons, Killian and Raftery. And she's currently still putting pen to paper and is working on her first novel. Alexis, thanks so much for reading, and thank you for coming along to join us. And congratulations on getting to the final 10 on what is a prestigious and powerful competition. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a huge honor.
The story itself, and I saw it was described as focusing on what would be the differences between how men and women can view the world very differently. Mm-hmm. Given that your background is in music and you have toured and all the rest of it, did you have material from your previous life to draw on in order to come up with the story?
I think that is accurate. The story was actually inspired by a musician friend of mine. He is not Joseph in the piece, but he traveled to Cuba and he was telling me about the sex work industry there. And he did describe it in sort of very casual terms. And I thought that was really interesting. And It does sort of jive with how I think sometimes men and women can see the world extremely differently, and our perception of things and our views of things are shaped by our sex and how we inhabit the world differently as men and women. But in terms of how my previous life as a touring musician informed this piece, yes, but only very modestly. I would say that the main source of inspiration was this conversation I had with a friend of mine.
Before I forget, I do need to cover one thing. Dual Irish citizenship, where's the Irish component?
So my grandmother was born in Banbridge before they all immigrated to Canada.
Right. And have you been able to maintain that connection? Right.
Not as much as I would like. Now that I have my own kids, I recognize how important it is for them to understand their cultural background. So I'm making more of an effort to go back to Ireland. My husband has Scottish citizenship, so we also try to get to Scotland as well. But no, I feel like I would like to foster a stronger relationship with Ireland than I have in the past.
It's interesting in how you, as a musician and performer, having been out representing yourself in the visual arts, now are working on the arts where, as a result of putting words on paper, the reader has to visualize what you wish them to visualize, that they are totally different disciplines. Where did you, or when did you, or what is there that hooked you into writing?
I've always written my entire life. I've written, but I've never written with an audience in mind. So it's only very recently that I've felt brave enough to share my work with others. I do think music and writing are related in the sense that I approach both art forms intuitively. I guess I'm kind of unstructured in my approach to both music and to writing. So I do find like there is a crossover in terms of the creativity associated with both forms, even though the technique and the skills are very different. I do think there is overlap, though, between the two of them.
So, what encouraged you to enter this year's Francis McManus short story competition?
I was sent a notice from a friend of mine, and I truly entered it on a whim. I had this short story on my laptop, that I had tried unsuccessfully to get published through other publications. And I thought, why not? I mean, it's free to enter. I have nothing to lose. I'm no worse off, if it doesn't go anywhere. And I was honestly completely shocked that I made the short list. I mean, I just did not expect that at all.
I imagine on, was it the 20th of November, you would have been all ears as it was being read on Late Date.
Yes, it was an amazing experience hearing an actress interpret my story. And she, I mean, it's beautifully read. And she, yeah, she does just such a phenomenal job. But what was so fascinating was hearing someone interpret the characters in a different way than I envision them as the writer, which is sort of the magic of writing and hearing people's responses to your writing when it gets published, is that often people will see things and pick up on things that you yourself might not have intended, but it sort of opens a window into the human psyche and the human condition.
So, in working on your next novel, does this experience then, particularly what you have just said, that when you hear somebody else interpret your work, will that color how you now approach how you continue to write?
No, I don't think so. I think for me, I write for myself and for what I write for myself. I write for my own creative benefit. So I rarely have an audience in mind whenever I produce something. And I think it might be dangerous for me to have an audience in mind when I'm producing something, just because I think it might erode the artistic integrity of what it is I'm trying to do. So no, but I do think it can be a really special experience to hear someone interpret your piece. Once it's out in the world. And truly, you have no control over how people interpret your piece either, which is terrifying, but also sort of exhilarating.
So then transitioning from a short story to a novel, it's, I guess, like transitioning from one track to a full album.
Yes.
Do you have to approach it in a disciplined fashion, or do you approach your writing in a disciplined fashion where you set aside a certain amount of time after the kids have gone to bed, or that there's a precious time for your writing?
Yes, I think you have to carve out time, because if you don't, then your project will just stagnate. So I have made a promise to myself to try and write 250 words per day, and they could be terrible sentences, but at least I'm getting something down on paper. A short story is, I mean, I guess both forms present their own unique challenges, but a short story is so contained, and it's a lot easier to focus on that short form and polish it. Whereas I find with novel writing, it's sort of this big shaggy mess, and it's constantly evolving. The characters are evolving. And they lead you to places that might mean that you have to rewrite half the manuscript. So of course it's more challenging from that perspective, but it's also I guess it's the difference between running a marathon versus running the 100-meter dash. they're both challenging, but it's but they're both rewarding in their own way.
So, excuse me, how far along in the process are you at the moment then on the novel you're working on?
I do have a draft completed that I think is fairly polished. But of course, I'm still workshopping it with some of my writer friends, and there are always areas for improvement. So I'm hoping to find a publisher in the next couple of years, but I'm trying not to rush the process.
Right. And when you say you're workshopping it, so you're sending it out to some friends who you're asking to come back and be honestly critical
Yes.
with you. It must be hard for friends to kind of to come back and be honestly critical. And because they're people that may have it, that are part of your life one way or another, can that kind of criticism be hard to absorb?
I haven't found it difficult, mostly because you can always find, well, I personally can always find something to like in a piece of writing. I don't think I've ever come across a piece of writing where I didn't have anything complimentary to say. And I find writers are pretty good about highlighting the positive aspects of a piece while also identifying the areas that you could work on. We all have very fragile egos. I mean, it is very, it's a very vulnerable process to share something that you've written, and it can be very, you can feel quite exposed. And I think writers are attuned to that. And so we craft our critique knowing that that you have to be careful with how you present criticism. So I guess I'm fortunate I have sensitive writer friends, and I haven't come across any, particularly awful feedback.
You've no nobody who has been brutally honest.
Yes, that's true. That's why I don't think if I ever got anything, any novel published, I don't think I would go on to the review section of a website or anything to read the reviews. I actually received that advice from a Canadian writer, Helen Humphrey. She said, just don't ever read reviews of your books, just in case. The good reviews are great, but a bad review will stick with you forever. So.
And throughout all this, you're managing to maintain your music career, and not to the same extent that you did, of course, that
Yeah.
you have a full-time job and you're probably and two kids, but you're still able to play and enjoy music. And are you doing any dancing these days, or did you dance?
I didn't dance in Riverdance. I played fiddle in
Okay.
Riverdance. So I'm not a dancer. I have two left feet. But no, I music will always be a part of my life. I'll always play. Our two sons are learning fiddle, so that means that I end up practicing with them, and my husband plays with me, and yeah, no, it's great. It's a key component of my life, even if it's not central to my life right now.
Alexis, it has been a real pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much indeed for taking the time. Congratulations on the achievement, a powerful achievement. And I know that from time to time, given that we end up in the same place, we will find ourselves in the same room again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.